Greetings in the light of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is abandoning pain, letting go of your karma drama. That's a good one, huh? The ego uses pain as a way to identify self. You know, it was interesting. They did an interview of some teenagers that were mutilating themselves by cutting themselves. And when they asked why they were doing that, they said, because at least if I can feel pain, I know that I exist. So that unconscious part of us that we call the sleeping, unawakened self is what we would define as the ego. And the ego thrives and derives a sense of self by the past, the rehashing of the past, the recreating in the mind and in the emotions, the feeling and the drama and the intensity and the pain of the past, and trying to recreate the past, even, as illogical as this may seem, even if the past was intensely painful, for the very reason that we just said that the teenagers mutilated themselves, because it gave them a sense of existence. So tonight we're going to look at that part of us that is the truth of who we are, that eternal part that is supremely blissful, supremely whole, and absolutely, totally filled with peace and joy, regardless of the drama going on in the outer world. Today I was watching on CNN the arrival and the speech that the Pope gave to the visiting bishops, which represented the hierarchical leadership of Catholicism throughout, I suppose, the world, at least in the United States. And it was interesting because the people were thronged around cheering and yelling and crying and deeply moved by seeing the pontiff. And the reason I believe that it was so very important to so very many people is that he represents our collective conscience. In a way, I suppose, similar to the Dalai Lama, who I would say represents our collective compassion, our social conscience, and the Pope, our religious conscience. Or we could say another well-known leader, they say his picture is recognized worldwide immediately, is Billy Graham, often called America's pastor. And I would say he most represents that Christian life that most Christians would like very much to have visible in their own expression, their own marriage, their own life, and their own contribution to the world. So humanity places archetypes of collective states of awareness upon certain people that it then holds up. And interestingly enough, as much as the idealism that we would like and aspire to live by is held up, at the same time, the negative ego self will try to bring down those very people by trying to find a flaw. 9 times out of 10, that flaw that they will try to pinpoint and put their finger on is a sexual or a moral so-called infraction of what humanity in their ego sense has judged to be wrong. So this tendency of the ego to look for weaknesses and to exacerbate and highlight the weaknesses in the people, the very people we set up on these arbitrary pedestals, is what we want to look at, because it's something that we all have. We all have that unconscious part of ourself or ego. We all have pasts, and we've all had pain. And we all have attachments, and we all have a divine incarnation that is who we truly are, living inside our skin, thinking through our mind. In fact, let's just take a deep breath right now. And first of all, be aware of the life force in your body. Pick up, pick your hands or your feet, because they have a lot of nerve endings. Do you feel the rushing, the surcharging of the atoms moving about in your blood, your circulatory system? Are you aware of your whole body? Who is that that's aware of your whole body? Ha, 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 ha. It's not your body, is it? Somebody just now was aware of your prana, your chi force, your vitality. And who right now is listening through your ears? Who is observing your thoughts? Who is it that's seeing through your eyes? Who is it that is the witness of your daily life, your actions, your feelings, your thoughts? Beloved, that is you. That is you as awareness, as consciousness, or what has been termed soul. You know, every time we lose sight of our body and our karma drama and our pain and our past, we come into the peace and bliss of the self. The problem is that most people have become so attached to a limited sense of self that they feel actually lost or uncomfortable if they aren't telling you their karma drama, if they're not reflecting about who did what or said what or the pain they're having or the illness. We can create a drama out of anything we have on the surface of our life. But the one unfailing characteristic that you are misperceiving and looking at something and attached to something that is not real is that you will experience pain. Pain lets you know that you're looking at something that you're not designed to process. You're not designed to be attached to. And yet, it's an experiential part of this ticket that we bought, which earned us passage into a seemingly human embodiment in this time and space continuum we call the 21st century. Now, switching back again to the Pope, I was deeply moved as they were doing the Benedictine Gregorian chants, which are so moving, which this particular Pope is encouraging this to again be presented in the church. The ceremony and everything is very moving. It's very beautiful on one level. I took it, as I do all things, as a meditation. And yet behind it, the main message that these bishops wanted to have addressed by the Pope was the sexual pedophilia that has been so much in the news. And, of course, this Pope dealt with that issue, I felt, in a very elegant and appropriate manner. But what you have to realize is that we are pointing fingers, and I say we, meaning a collective consciousness that we all share called humanity. We are pointing fingers at a symptom of a corporate and collective creation. In other words, let's expand for a moment to the concept that we are one life expressing through a myriad of races, colors, creeds, ideologies, mindsets, personalities, karma dramas, pain fields, whatevers. We share this. Not only do we share it, beloveds, we have created, allowed, perpetrated, indulged in, castigated, been crucified for, been the crucifiers of, etc., and so on, throughout history. History, beloved, is our story, our collective karma drama. You cannot divorce yourself from anything that has happened in all of history. We, as one species, as one family, as one tapestry in which we're all intrinsically interwoven as threads of consciousness, we cannot separate ourselves from anyone or anything or any act. If one has done it, we have all done it. If one has thought it, we have all thought it. If one suffers, we all suffer. If one is lifted and set free, we're all lifted and set free. It's just the way it is. And so, as we point the finger at pedophiles, it's the pedophile within us that has been a pedophile at some point, or the victim of being whatever that is called when it's done to you. That part of us is the one that's pointing out and wanting to accuse the other, because it helps the ego to label someone else with its whatever you would call that misendeavor. That way it buys itself freedom from blame. You see how the ego works? It works entirely by projection. It never sees anything of the self. It sees only the projection on another. So that's one way that you can use the world in what's called in the psychological work, mirroring. You can mirror, you can look into what you judge, what you have an issue with, what you react against or towards, because attachment and the opposite of attachment are the same. They both bind you to the pain of the ego. So as you look at whatever it is that pushes your button and makes you crazy to where you'd say, oh, well, I would never do that. Hello. Never say never, because that no doubt will be the very next thing on your karmic plate. I want to point out something here that most people probably are not aware of unless they've done some esoteric study. And humans, Homo sapiens, were first activated and quickened in their mental bodies 18.5 million years ago by a group of beings that came from Venus called the Lords of the Flame. Now these, the mental principle, the ability to think as a separate entity, was sparked at that time. This is what produced what is called the quantum leap, or the evolutionary leap, that people keep trying to find the missing link. Well, it wasn't on this planet. It was on the moon, which was a previous life zone before coming to Earth. So the human on Earth, the Homo sapien, the one who could know self, was sparked 18.5 million years ago and has evolved through different root races, which enabled the integration of consciousness. So in Lemuria, the Lemurian root race was the anchoring for the first time of that consciousness into a physical body. And so we have, as a race of beings, as a human race of beings, the root of our sexual abnormality, aberration, and fascination, the roots go back to Lemuria, Lemurian karma. You might ask here, well, what's sexual abnormality or aberration? Well, quite simply, whatever invades, hurts, imposes upon, or infringes upon another's free will would be an aberration from the divine love that you initially are as a spiritual being. So loveless actions, hurtful actions, are what we would call abnormal in terms of the divine quality and principle that we all embody. So all of the roots of what we have today in the difficulty with our sexual identity traces back to the initial Lemurian karma, the lesson of integrating appropriately the physical vehicle and beginning to operate in bipolarity, because we have the separation, you see, of the male and female aspects of the soul into different manifestations instead of being conjoined in divine androgyny. This goes way back into root races previous to the Lemurian, so I won't go any further back. But understand that we're working out some of the fundamental things that we didn't quite get integrated way back in Lemurian times. Now, the next area of karma that we're working through, unfinished lessons, let's say, has to do with the Atlantean root race. And today you can see that working out, because the issue in Atlantis was power, learning how to wield power. And therefore you had the abuse of power. You had to control, mind control, manipulate, emotionally manipulate, because it really wasn't mental so much as it was emotional, because in Atlantis they were integrating the astral body. So it was very emotional. And at that time they misused science. They mixed the genetic codes. They created a slave race of things that were neither human nor animal, but a part of the different gene pools. They misused power in terms of the darkest of the black arts you could possibly imagine to control, and they used drugs, again, to control the minds and the populace to influence them. So we have karma today that's working out in the physical arena of sexuality, drugs, power, leadership, control, science, all of the things that would be seen today in the world, where you have pockets of people that have very, very different ways that they want to govern their lives. And we have a planet right now that is suffering the effects of mental actions and emotional reactions that are not being governed consciously by the higher principles. And this is what has caused the problem on the planet. What to do without inflicting, invading people's free will and inflicting upon their right to be, do, and express as they wish? That's the problem, isn't it? There's a very wonderful book by Alice Bailey called The Problems of Humanity. I'm not quite remembering the name. I think it's called Glamour, World Problem. But it goes into the different areas where people are really having a tremendously difficult time sorting themselves out in a way that works for everybody. Because now the world has become too small. We have to actually learn how to share life here as a family that cooperates so that we can all be, do, and have that which would be the highest quality of life possible. We can't live as isolated nations. We can't live as isolated individuals. We are part of the solution, just as we have been part of the problem. So the negative reaction is always of the ego, of the false self. And we step out of that divine alignment in its clarity when we step into the ego, which is why, for example, the spiritual teachings are so distorted when they go into the religious field. is because people who are basically egos working in the unconscious levels of misperception of self, they're the ones that create the religions around these great figures that appear from time to time, like Christ and Buddha and Krishna and Sai Baba and the different beings that come forward. And the negative reactions of the people actually around these great figures, the interpretations they make, the projections they project, then goes into creating the religious doctrine around people. And the ego loves religious doctrine. It loves political party affiliation. It loves anything that will enable it to label and therefore feel safe behind the label. Labeling enables the ego to go back to sleep and not have to be present. It enables the situation to be, it's almost as if the ego goes, it's safe. I've given it a label, therefore I know what it is, I understand what it is, and so I don't have to deal with it anymore. And of course, this accounts for the very, very superficial and meaningless and empty lives and sense of emptiness that all ego-driven people experience. So the ego is made entirely of form identification and mental concepts and labels. And the average person, if you ask them, who are you? And, you know, what is your credentials, or, you know, if you have to fill out what do you call those things that you do for jobs? I don't even remember. It's been so long since I've had a job. Over 20 years I've been doing this work. But they'll often say, well, I'm a successful whatever. Let's just use this example. I'm a successful doctor. I own a Mercedes. I live in a mansion. I own a villa on the Riviera. I'm worth $1.5 billion. I'm an atheist, or a Zen Buddhist or Catholic or New Ager or a communist or a Muslim or or whatever. In other words, they will give you all of the labels that they have hidden their identity under, which therefore gives them a sense of who they are. And yet not one thing are they going to take with them into eternity. Not one of those things I've mentioned has anything to do with who they are or why they're here. Another thing, you'll often find people identifying themselves, oh, I'm transgendered, or I'm a homosexual, or I'm heterosexual, or I'm bisexual, or I'm asexual. Not too many of them, but I suppose there's a few. Or I'm a celibate, or I'm an alcoholic, I'm a diabetic, I'm a cocaine addict, I'm a manic depressive, and on and on and on. People will identify themselves with these painful states, these separative states that have nothing whatsoever to do with who you are. Who you are is everything and nothing. It's one of those divine paradoxes. You can say, I am to everything, and you can also say, I am none of it to everything. I am both everything and I am no thing. And both is true. So in this sense of who you are, behind the label, behind the concept, behind the ideology, shines a pristine truth that is just waiting to burst forth in magnificence through your mouth, through your skin, through your eyes, through your smile, through your behavior, through your thoughts, through your writings, through your art, through everything. It's just waiting to burst forth. And spirit is no respecter of persons. It will step forth and use any man, woman, child, baby, anything that will present itself to be used. In fact, some of the greatest people on the planet had absolutely nothing to go that was going for them. Nothing. Some of the greatest people had the worst history of failure behind them, like Lincoln, like Einstein, like George Washington Carver, like Helen Keller. So many people started with nothing and stepped forward to be used of spirit with a simple willingness to be useful. And look at what happened when that emptiness was presented in humility, and it was filled with great, great glory. That glory is who you are, beloved. So, looking at your life, the experience that you need most to grow the fastest, that which will do it for you in the quickest, simplest way, is the experience you are having right now. Whatever it is, when you face it in the light of simply presenting yourself in innocence, without the need to label, without the need to make a form around it or build a concept around it, when you just stay present, alert, quiet, empty, and present as the observer, you will break through that pain. You will break through that karma drama, and you will experience the self. That's how you clear karma. That's how you step free of pain. I remember I had an extremely painful condition in my body. It was so painful that I even felt the wave of people's auras walking by the bed. I felt their feet, you know, making the carpet move in the room next to me. It was horrific. And I was in the pain for about 2 months. And I remembered that the only relief that I had was to focus very, very strongly in my third eye. And when I did that with full attention, I would lift beyond the pain and my body. I wouldn't feel it. So I kept myself at that third eye focus for 2 months, and I was forced to, because otherwise I would dip down into the pain, the physical pain. So any time that you wish to transcend pain, focus in the seat of the soul, which is that point right between your eyebrows. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. And be the witness behind your eyebrows. And just be present with the situation without doing anything about it, but allowing it to be, without trying to evade or avoid or explain or rationalize. Just stay present. And the light behind your eyes that is the soul, that is the awareness, that is the witness self, will dissolve the pain. I did that also one time when I was in intense emotional pain from the breakup of a romance. And I had the same experience. Just staying present. Just letting it be. And not trying to avoid. Not doing anything. Just bare observation. The light of your soul will dissolve that shadow of pain, that shadow self, which we call the ego, the dweller on the threshold, the devil. We have all these names for the same thing, the shadow self. And all of it is simply misidentification of yourself with something that is very illusory and temporary and transient. So, consider that, if you will. And as you look at the world, bear in mind that the world is simply a reflection of our collective choice to learn something. And today, we're learning about how powerful we are.
as individuals, how powerful we are in our collectivity. Because if anything else, the Aquarian race is about, the Aquarian age is about the collective. It's about the brotherhood of man and the brother and sisterhood of man and the father motherhood of God. It is about our quantum leap into an age where science and the understanding of energy and consciousness will be the vehicle of revelation. In fact, the very fact that the seventh ray is impacting us right now, primarily in the root chakra, is the reason why we're so stimulated. It hits the root chakra in the base of the spine, and the seventh ray stimulates the crown chakra. So what you have on a positive level of increasing enlightenment, you have the correct use of power, leadership, sexuality, the correct way of modern commerce, the governing of finance. You have the deeper esoteric understanding of the science of energy and how it operates through form. And on a negative level, you have all sorts of sexual craziness going forth. You have the misuse of mind power, the misuse of power and leadership in business, finance, politics, and basically corruption on every level. You have it all. So all of our lessons today are based and crouched around our entrance into a new energy field called the Aquarian Age. It also stimulates the mental body. So you have a highly agitated and highly sensitive public conscience right now that is thinking and debating and questioning, and everything is up for grabs now. In the Piscean Age, you had a more of a approach through devotion and religion and authority figures and patriarchal figures and people who would tell you what was the right thing to do, and then all you had to do was follow like a little duck whatever they said. And, you know, you would at least be religious or acceptable or whatever. And then on a negative side, you have the sixth ray, which becomes fanaticism. And you have this despotic abuse of religious hierarchical systems and political systems and so forth. So the working of the Piscean Age, which is basically water and emotional body based, and the Aquarian Age, which is basically air and mental body based, you have again the very complexity of what we're working through today as a collective species of consciousness. And again, I go on perhaps record to say that I do not believe that we're going to have any of those horrible things happen that so many prophets of doom are prophesying. I see us moving into a totally new version of life by 2012. Not that we're even limited to 2012, but I don't see any of this awful stuff coming to bear that you see and hear constantly. Everywhere you turn, people's got some sort of a negative thing that's going to happen. And I don't choose to, it's not that I don't choose to believe it, it's that I have never, ever been shown anything like that occurring. And I don't think I'm, I think I'm a pretty good seer, pretty clear in what I see, as clear as any other person, I suppose, today on the planet. So for what it's worth, I would not, if I were you, just as someone listening to my program, I would not advise you to buy so heavily into the negative rhetoric that's out there. Ask yourself, when you hear something negative, whether it's somebody's dream or somebody's projection of what's going to happen with this or that, or I'm not going to even define it too much for you. Just whenever you hear somebody else say, oh, well, this is going to happen, and this, you know, in a negative sense, ask yourself, what have I experienced with regard to that information? What has been your experience? That is the only thing that you need to pay any attention to. No matter who says what about any other person or any other whatever, you fill in the blank, ask yourself, but what has been my experience? Because I'll tell you, in the spiritual world, until you've experienced it for yourself, you will always have questions, you will always have doubts, you'll always have issues about it. You'll never feel complete clarity until you have seen it through the eyes of your own inner knowing, your own intuitive knower within. That is the only one that you need to listen to and be loyal to. Don't be loyal to anything outside of yourself. In fact, one time when I asked my teacher, I said, am I on the right track? And he said, to follow the spirit outwardly is being on the wrong track. To follow the spirit inwardly, you're on the right track. So even if you do subscribe to a belief system or you're a member of a religious congregation, don't go to sleep inside yourself. Begin to really ask yourself, how does that information apply to me? What is my experience with it? Is this a truth that I need to embrace of? Or is this an opinion? Has this been somehow colored by the teacher's interpretation? What does it say to me, and how can I apply it or not in terms of my own ability to work the information? If you stay in these guidelines, you'll find yourself in a much clearer, much more honest state. And then all you need to do is move yourself in the direction of what works for you. As I've said before, this path is a minute-by-minute path. It's like a razor's edge. Because in the lower realms, beneath the realm of the fifth dimension, or soul, the plane of soul, you have this mixed bag of every variation of light and shadow, and darkness and gray and shades of gray. It's like a tweed, like a tweed weave with all these different colors in it. And so you can never say, oh, that's fully good. Oh, no, that's fully evil. Because we have both of those components within us at any given time. And let me point back to a statement in Genesis. I think we're all familiar with the chapter in Genesis 1 and 2 where creation is described. And after everything that was created, Elohim saw what was created, and Elohim said, it was good. And then when Elohim created man, he saw man was very, very good. And then he gave the naming of the species and the differentiation over to Adam, so that Adamic man, could then decide in terms of duality what to call things in their specialized expression. To the divine, it was all good, all perfect. He was a happy camper, or she was a happy camper, however you want to designate supreme power. And then Adamic man, Adamic woman, was left, in other words, the human being was left, to then, split hairs as to what was good, bad, and indifferent. And we've been splitting those hairs ever since until we're all tied up in a wad of our own making. And so we're in the process now, just as we're in the last dredges of moving through the karma drama's intensity of confronting our unfinished business in the fourth dimension, because ready or not, we're being issued forth, we're being extruded out of the birth canal into a new version of the earth, a new heaven and a new earth. And wow, it is one heck of a ride today. And I think it's exciting. I love it. I'm really stoked. But it's not terribly fun when you're all caught up in your karma drama and really attached to your pain body. That's not fun. Speaking of pain bodies, I've been participating, as I suppose a lot of you have been, with Eckhart Tolle and Oprah on their 10-week class. And it's called A New Earth. I highly recommend the book by Eckhart Tolle. And I highly recommend studying the classes. You can listen every Monday night, or you can also go to the archives and listen as well. And he's dealing with the ego and the pain body that is created by the ego. And anyway, that's that. So again, let's return again to the sense of self as we take a deep breath. And feel the energy of life coursing through your veins. Know that you, as that life force, have worn every color of skin. Know that you have worshipped God by every name, in every form. Know that you have subscribed to every belief, every philosophy. You have lived on every continent. You have lived under every ideological form of government. You have been the leaders, all of you, and you have all been enslaved. You have all been the slave masters. You have all been the slaves. You have been the criminals, and you have been the saints. You have been the most cruel, and you have been the most noble. Own it all. In owning it all, you will see that there is never anything that you need to judge. There is never anything that you need to project negativity upon. You simply stay present as the observer. That true self, beloved, is what the great philosopher Jiddu Krishnamurti called choiceless awareness. It's the unconditioned state of simply observing that which is. Whenever you rush to explain, you miss the mystery. Can you be comfortable with realizing that you will never understand yourself truly because you go so deep? Your depth goes beyond eternity. Your depth is the depth and mystery of the divine itself. There is no end to God, and there's no end to you, because basically you're one and the same in essence. So be comfortable with not knowing what things are for, with not knowing what to say, without having a plan, without having an agenda, without having anything you have to do or have to believe or have to join or have to have. Can you be content in being whole and complete and perfect and full right now without attaching that to something outside yourself? Take a deep breath and simply own. I am complete. I am whole. I am perfect. I am that I am. And be the peace of God. No matter what's going on, treat the world like a big ocean. All different kinds of dramatics going on the surface. And dive deep, deep into the quiet beneath all the surface agitations. You will do more for bringing our world into balance and harmony and peace than all the fighting and kerfuffle that's going on the surface. Don't be anti anything. Simply be pro-life, and that more abundant. That life more abundant in its original meaning when Jesus said, I've come to give you life, and that more abundant. It's that fullness. It's, again, that shalom, that sozo, that I've spoken about. The sozo in Greek means the wholeness, the fullness. And it has the same meaning in Hebrew, in shalom, and the same meaning in Sanskrit, which is shanti, or prashanti, which is all-pervasive peace. So shanti, shalom, shanti, shalom. Begin to embrace of the shalom, of the shanti, of the sozo, of the atonement, of the salvation that is who you are and what you are and what is yours eternally. And let go of the little me, the little storyline that's all about me and mine and what happened to the little puppet running around in time and space that's pulled by the strings of the karma drama puppet master, the ego. Let it go. Let it go. Or laugh at it. One of the best ways to slip out of the noose of this heavy karma drama consciousness that is the pain of the separated self is simply to laugh. You know, when you laugh, the negativity cannot find any place to lodge. In fact, one of the surest signs that, pardon the metaphor, but I just can't help but go there. If it gets your panties in a wad, you're being anal retentive, which means you're in your ego, beloved. You're in your survival lower chakras. Get out of them. The survival lower chakras are about fear, about security, about being safe. You know, that old root chakra dance that we're working through. So let it go, beloved. Let it go. Laugh. Be a fool for God. Be silly. Be, you know, watch a lot of Robin Williams. Boy, what a master of humor and repartee this guy is. Watch a lot of him and begin to develop that lightness of being that is characteristic of every single enlightened soul I have ever been with. They are Looney Tunes. They are goofy. And they have the sense to be able to laugh at themselves and to laugh at life and to laugh at things that would seem so uptight to a person who is totally invested in their little storyline. So the sense of being a little bit too serious is the sense that you're invested again in the pain. And let it go, beloved. I want to read Lesson 41 from the workbook for students for A Course in Miracles. It's so perfect for today's thought that I would like to read it in its entirety, along with the exercise, which will apply to every single person, because no matter where you are in your spiritual unfoldment, you will have a definite experience of who you are, of God, if you will. If you do this, you can't fail. And again, the Course in Miracles is said to have been given by Jesus through interlocution or divine dictation to Helen Schuckman, who, by the way, was not a believer. She was an atheist intellectual, a doctor of psychology, and was not buying into any of this initially. And so in that sense, I think it's very good because it came from a totally unconditioned religious concept at that time from this woman. So the lesson number 41 is entitled, God Goes With Me Wherever I Go. Today's idea will eventually overcome completely the sense of loneliness and abandonment that all separated ones experience. Depression is an inevitable consequence of separation. So are anxiety, worry, a deep sense of helplessness, misery, suffering, and intense fear of loss. The separated ones have invented many cures for what they believe to be the ills of the world. But the one thing they do not do is to question the reality of the problem. Yet its effects cannot be cured because the problem is not real. The idea for today has the power to end all of this foolishness forever. And foolishness it is, despite the serious and tragic forms it may take. Deep within you is everything that is perfect, ready to radiate through you and out into the world. It will cure all sorrow and pain and fear and loss, because it will heal the mind that thought these things were real and suffered out of its allegiance to them. You can never be deprived of your perfect holiness, because its source goes with you wherever you go. You can never suffer, because the source of all joy goes with you wherever you go. You can never be alone, because the source of all life goes with you wherever you go. Nothing can destroy your peace of mind, because God goes with you wherever you go. We understand that you do not believe all of this. How could you? When the truth is hidden deep within, under a heavy cloud of insane thoughts, dense and obscuring, yet representing all that you see. Today, we will make our first real attempt to get past this dark and heavy cloud and go through it into the light beyond. There will be only one long practice period for today. In the morning, as soon as you get up, if possible, sit quietly for some 3 to 5 minutes with your eyes closed. At the beginning of the practice period, repeat today's idea very slowly. Then make no effort to think of anything. Try instead to get a sense of turning inward, past all the idle thoughts of the world. Try to enter very deeply into your own mind, keeping it clear of any thoughts that might divert your attention. From time to time, you may repeat the idea if you find it helpful. But most of all, try to sink deep down, inward, away from the world and all the foolish thoughts of the world. You are trying to reach past all of these things. You are trying to leave appearances and approach reality. It is quite possible to reach God. In fact, it is very easy, because it is the most natural thing in the world. You might even say it is the only natural thing in the world. The way will open if you believe that it is possible. This exercise can bring very startling results even the first time it is attempted, and sooner or later, it is always successful. We will go into more detail about this kind of practice as we go along, but it will never fail completely, and instant success is possible. Throughout the day, use today's idea often, repeating it very slowly, preferably with eyes closed. Think of what you're saying and what the words mean. Concentrate on the holiness that they imply about you, on the unfailing companionship that is yours, on the complete protection that surrounds you. You can indeed afford to laugh at fear thoughts, remembering that God goes with you wherever you go. And God goes with you, beloveds, wherever you go, because God lives in you as unconditioned awareness, as that alert and present observer. So in your day-to-day, practice just being still, being alert, and being quiet. And watch how that sense of the sacred descends upon you. And that peace of God simply is present. That is the practice that will bring you into what is called God realization, when all you see is the glorious face of the one life, the one beloved, in and as all things, all states of being, all the many disguises that that one supreme life embodies as and through. There is nothing in all of existence that God does not dwell within. There is nothing in existence that is inanimate. Everything is filled with that one divine spirit of life, and that is who you are and what you are eternally as the Beloved itself. So tonight we will go out chanting, Shanti Shalom, Shanti Shalom. Shanti Shalom, Shanti Shalom, Shanti Shalom, Shanti Shalom. And we send love and peace and light to all worlds, to all beings, wherever they are, to all nations, to everyone as they move forward into our beautiful transformation into the fifth world, the world of divine love. Baruch Hashem Adonai, blessed is the name of the Lord. Adonai.